Memorials of Grace, Commentary for the October 18, 2025 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. The water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap a great distance away at a town called Adam in the vicinity of Zarethan. While the water flowing down to the Sea of the Arabah, that is, the Dead Sea, was completely cut off. So the people crossed over opposite Jericho. The priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stopped in the middle of the Jordan and stood on dry ground, while all Israel passed by until the whole nation had completed the crossing on dry ground. Joshua 3, verses 16 and 17. This scene by Jericho was repeated many years later when Elijah parted the waters of the Jordan River by Jericho before crossing over to be taken up to heaven in a fiery chariot. He struck the river with his mantle or cloak to part the stream, and when he was gone, Elisha picked up the garment and did the same to pass back across the Jordan. This is where we get the phrase about passing the mantle of leadership from one generation to another. This was also the case with Moses and Joshua. Moses parted the sea, and that act confirmed his leadership of the people when they were leaving slavery in Egypt behind. His successor Joshua was identically confirmed when the Jordan was dried up to allow all the people to cross over to the plain of Jericho. The latter miracle was no less spectacular because the river was blocked at least 20 miles upstream from Jericho, where the blockage was likely unseen from the Jericho area. It has been speculated that the cliffs next to the river collapsed, blocking the water's flow to allow all the people to cross. This is because in 1927, a similar obstruction occurred. Whether the blockage was due to geologic instability or from the power of the Ark of the Covenant standing in the midst of the river, the timing was propitious and left little doubt who was in command of Israel. The instability of the region cannot be denied because of the towns and wonders that were toppled long ago by seismic activity. Even the conquest of Jericho seems to have been accomplished by the shaking of foundations and the toppling of walls. And just as there was no going back to Egypt once the sea closed over Pharaoh's army, there was no retreat from Jericho once the Jordan closed behind Joshua and the Israelite tribes. One might say that except for the 40 intervening years, Joshua was reenacting the scenes that played out for that earlier generation. Just as each of the 12 tribes sent a man to spy out the land of Canaan for Moses, Joshua sent two spies to Jericho, symbolic of the two spies who earlier gave a good report and encouraged their forefathers to go up and possess the land. The spies that visited Jericho also brought back a good and encouraging report. All four spies, Caleb and Joshua from before and the pair sent now, entered the land and invoked God's promise to the patriarch Abraham, not as originally planned, without so much loss of life, and with much stumbling along the way. But God remained faithful despite the waywardness of the people. This is the way with humanity. We seem to wander like sheep, thinking we can find greener pastures somewhere else. We prefer hiding in the bushes in our nakedness instead of walking with God in paradise. Our definition of heaven is to have milk and honey and never-ending treasure pour into our hands without significant effort on our part. We simply open our hands and there it is. While God's loving grace will often bestow good things for his people, it is a mistake to presume that no matter what, we can claim those treasures as surely as if we deserve them because of our own great brilliance. The mistake in believing that is testified to by the bodies of those who died during those 40 years of wandering, victims of their own distrust of God and the grace he so freely bestows. When God created Adam and Eve, it was not with the idea they could simply lay about under the trees of the Garden of Eden and have food drop into their mouths without effort. They were placed in the garden to tend and keep it, according to Genesis 2, verse 15. Humanity has a responsibility to care for the earth, not only to selfishly provide for our own needs, but to provide for all needs. However, some have caught a disease, the disease of insatiable greed. As a result, most have nowhere near enough, while very few sit on boundless hoards of wealth and resources, dreaming of ways to prevent anyone, no matter how needy, ever benefiting from having even the direst needs met by what that wealth could provide. Without access to those resources, we have become a society of beggars with constant appeals for money from charities that would not even need to exist were there not such hoarding of resources. Jesus spoke repeatedly about such evil. The parable of the rich man and Lazarus in Luke chapter 16, verses 19 through 31, condemned the indifferent hoarding of wealth and the expectation that the wealthy could hope for any blessings later, even though they denied blessings to the needy or failed to show respect or kindness to those they considered beneath them while they lived. We see such wealthy people on the news lately wearing their little gold crosses and pretending they are saints while grinding the needy beneath their heels. Then they have the effrontery to claim that because we are in a new covenant, they will be saved by grace no matter how much evil they perpetrate in this life. Their hearts are stone, and they are unwilling to humble themselves that God might give them caring hearts of flesh, like in Ezekiel 36, verse 26. But it is not just the new covenanters who have such hard hearts. Jesus was approached by a wealthy young man who asked what he needed to do to be saved in Matthew 19, verses 16 through 26. Despite his wealth and his careful observance of the commandments, he felt he was still lacking what was needed. Jesus walked him through the law, and he claimed to be observant of all. But then Jesus, while praising him for his obedience, pointed out to him his need to use his wealth to be a blessing to others. He turned away from Jesus, for his wealth had become more important to him than treating others with the same love he would like to receive. Jesus pointed out that it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich person to enter God's kingdom. Some who worship wealth and power have tried to corrupt Jesus' words by insinuating that there was a gate in Jerusalem called the eye of the needle that Jesus was referring to, and not to an actual needle. But there has never been such a gate. The Greek makes clear that it is an actual needle, and the disciples understood it as such, for they replied that then it would be impossible for the rich to be saved. These two points constitute the two witnesses the Bible requires to verify the truth, so we should not be deceived by the false camel through the gate idea. Not only will we be stripped of all our wealth when we die, but if we have not learned the truth of this teaching, we will also fail to pass through the eye of the needle ourselves. How should we then live in response to the needs of others? We experimented last year and set aside a sum of money and donated to several charities that we felt represented worthy causes. Almost all of them used the money we sent not to help the needy, but to send us piles of mailings wanting more money. They also sold our name and address to other charities who inundated us with even more mailings demanding money for their needs. For the past year, we have received as many as a dozen requests from charities per day in the mail. The cost of all those mailings far exceeded the donations we gave. We examined biblical giving and discovered where we went wrong. In the words of Jesus, "So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets, as the hypocrites do, in the synagogues and on the streets, to be honored by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. Then your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you." Matthew 6, verses 2 through 4. I shared this with a conference treasurer and told him that I would be giving anonymously in the future. He told me that I would be sinning to do so. I took this as evidence of how far the church has strayed from the teachings of Jesus. Decades ago, after graduating from college and entering the pastoral ministry, my first wife was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. I needed to leave the pastoral ministry to care for her and help with raising my son. A degree in theology does not provide significant income opportunities, and things got so bad that when I did find short-term jobs, I would have to bring home toilet paper from the office so we could have some at home. I fell months behind on rent, but trusted God that He would not forsake us in our need. Then one day I was told by our landlord that a woman from my church had paid hundreds of dollars to bring our rent current. He did not know her name, as she chose to give anonymously. That gift allowed us to get a leg up and start to turn things around. I am sure she did not lose her blessing for her kindness. I now try to follow her example and give anonymously so I do not lose my blessing either. People tend to give money to churches and charities because it is easy, and those organizations stand as a buffer between us in our world and those experiencing real-world poverty. But I feel it would do each of us a world of good to get to know the needs of others directly and seek to meet those needs, not to get tax write-offs, not to have others think we are saintly givers, but simply because it is the right thing to do. It sure seemed right when someone else did it for me. Thank you for listening to this commentary podcast. You can find the written version of this commentary, as well as hundreds more commentaries and podcasts, at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. You can also find links to books on Amazon by the author, as well as other articles. Once again, that's www.visitstillwaters.com. May God richly bless you and your family.